Okay, my guest on podcasting himself this morning. I'm a big fan of his. It's really great to talk to him finally. He is the star of Ninja Busters, The Vineyard, College Kickboxer, Talons of the Eagle, TC2000, Femme Fontaine, The Killer Bay for the CIA, Tiger Claws 2, and most recently, Forbidden Power. It is really, really, really exciting for this fan to finally talk to the man, Harry Mock. Good morning, Harry. Or good afternoon, where you are.
Good morning. Hi, how are you? How are you? Well, thank you for the kind intro.
That's fine. Like I said, big fan of your stuff. Great to talk to you at last. Been watching you for many years now. Still have a lot of your movies on VHS back from the glory days. But it's great to talk to you, and congratulations on your, you know, it was great to see you in Forbidden Power, Paul's movie, recently.
I surely appreciate that. It's been a while since I've been in front of the camera because I've been doing a lot of, in the past years, producing and directing and writing.
Right.
And so when Paul asked me to do this, I thought, well, hey, you know, it's like riding a bicycle, right? You really never forget. So I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to getting back in front of the camera again, you know, once I finish up some of my producing projects.
Right. Of course, this isn't the first time you worked with Paul. As I mentioned in your credits, you worked with him on Ninja Busters back in the 80s.
Absolutely. And on top of that, Paul was one of my editors on The Vineyard.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
But you've worked with so many great people, Paul being one of them. Among the list of great names that you've been alongside are Cynthia Rothrock, Bolo Young, James Hong, the legendary James Hong, Billy Blanks, Matthias Hughes, Gerald Okamura. Wow. And of course, we shouldn't neglect to mention, you were in Rambo, First Blood Part 2.
Yeah. that was a great experience in my life because Sylvester Stallone personally hired me to be in that film. And originally wanted me to double some kicks for him.
Right.
But due to all the political BS, I ended up getting shot in the head with an arrow by him and pinned to a post.
Wow. Yeah, no, it must have been really cool because, I mean, at the time that was, you know, I mean, Sly is still, I mean, he's Sylvester Stallone. There's no way of getting around it. But, I mean, at the time, First Blood Part 2 was a huge movie. Rambo, a huge franchise.
Yeah.
So it must have been, as you say, like a massive, like, oh wow, you know, like to be in such a big movie with the, you know, the hottest action guy in Hollywood, yeah.
Yeah. So from what I could recall, I think Rambo 2 was the highest grossing film that back in 1985 when it was released.
Sure. But like I said, another extraordinary actor and gentleman that you've collaborated a lot with was James Hong, whose, man, his credits speak for themselves. I've still got The Vineyard on VHS, and a lot of people forget that James not only co-directed that but wrote that as well.
Absolutely. Well, I came up with the story idea, and it's a really it was just absolutely just crazy how, you know, we find ourselves in these positions, right, to do these type of projects. Originally, James and I connected in regards to one of his films that he wanted to do, and it was about kind of like a female version of The Karate Kid.
Right.
So what we did was we went ahead and set up a corporation, structured a limited partnership, and we went out to raise the money for that. You know, and it was a lower budgeted film. You know, it was a probably about $750,000 film, and we went out to raise the money for that. We went to the first investor, and man, right on the spot, he cut us a check for $40,000. And James and I were like, "Wow, we're right on our way."
Yeah.
Shortly thereafter, we couldn't raise one red cent after that. We couldn't raise any more money.
Right.
So James was kind of like, well, my goodness, what are we going to do, you know, because, you know, I do pretty good as an actor. If there's, you know, there's not much to offer here in Northern California, I just assume go back to Hollywood and work as an actor because I do pretty good as an actor.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, we're getting ready to lose James. We already spent about $14,000 putting together a corporation, structuring a limited partnership, you know, and I'm like, we're about to just, everything's about to completely go to pot, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, I had to think really fast. Mm. And that's when I came up with the idea to do a low-budget horror film.
Yes.
Then I thought, well, low-budget horror film, well, what is the story? What story can we do? And I actually, literally, you know, in a split moment, came up with the idea of The Vineyard.
Right. Wow.
So I worked out the story within my mind. Then I called up James, and I said, James, I got an idea. I know what we're going to do now. I said, we need to do a low-budget horror film. And he says, okay, well, yeah, we could do that.
Yeah.
And he said, but what is the story going to be about? And then I told him about The Vineyard. And he actually liked it. And I was like, wow, that's great. James liked the story.
Yeah.
So then I told him, I said, we're going to do it for $280,000. And he says, well, how can you determine we're going to do it for $280,000? We don't even have a script, because rule of thumb, you take a script, you break it down, you determine what your budget is. And I said, you know what, James? You know, this is low budget. We're going to raise, I figured it out in my mind, $280,000. We need to work ass backwards and just do the movie for what we have to make it with. And he said, oh, okay, you think we could do it? I said, absolutely. So we started on the story. We put together the screenplay, and we made it happen. And what was really exciting about that is that the film sold all over the world. We did not do a theatrical in the U.S., but it became a cult film overseas. And what I've been finding out is that all of these movies that I've been in, these you know, lower budgeted films that didn't get a theatrical release in the U.S. All got theatrical releases overseas, and I finally realized that I had a bigger following overseas than I did in the U.S.
Yeah, it's funny.
I mean,
that's
the truth. That is the truth, because these movies actually, they may not have made it to theatrical in the U.S., but they went theatrical all over in the rest of the world, and The Vineyard actually became like a cult film.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I saw The Vineyard in a very small, it wasn't a huge theater back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And actually snuck in with older cousins to see it, because I was too young, and they kind of, they bought three tickets and kind of pushed me through the door so before the guy saw I was too young. And it was great. And like I said, I still got my old VHS copy of it. Because it's just great. And yeah, like you said, it's funny that movies, you know, have a different life. Like, you know, just because they don't sort of come out in a big way sometimes doesn't mean that they're not seen somewhere, somehow, some way, like you said, in a different country. Like releases of yours, like I remember when Talons of the Eagle came out, and there was a huge poster campaign, and there was a big cardboard thing in the video store, and I was like, oh, what's this? You know, this looks really cool. I mean, because, you know, being a big fan of those action movies, it comes out of nowhere. And back in that time, there were so many movies that seemed to just appear because of the VHS revolution, because a lot of movies found a longer life and have maintained a longer life because of video and now DVD and eventually with digital, with streaming and all that kind of thing. Yeah, so all of your movies were huge here. I remember going to a small cinema to see Femme Fontaine, the killer babe from the CIA.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. And that was like,
my goodness.
That played on a double bill with another, there was another sort of an action comedy at the same time. But, you know, it was strange. Like, you know, thankfully nowadays it's more in vogue today because of the nostalgia factor, that there are a lot of these revival theaters now playing, you know, older movies. You know, it's really nothing different from when my parents were younger and there were revival theaters then that played, you know, the movies of the 40s and 50s, you know, and now now the 80s is like, you know, playing the movies of the 80s is revival houses playing movies from the 80s, you know, which probably didn't get much of a theatrical release in some instances, but it's nice to see them still hanging around. And of course, like I said, VHS was a great river which flowed through everything, and it brought all of these wonderful movies that, whether they got theatrically released or not, they definitely came out on video, and video is how most people, especially here in Australia, where movies from the US that didn't get, or maybe had a small theatrical release, definitely came out on video, and that's how we saw most of them. That's how most of we saw all the movies on video. But like I said, a few of them did get very brief runs, but runs nonetheless in theaters. So yeah, so it's been really cool. I actually watched the Vineyard the other night when David said, you know, I might get a chance to talk to you. I watched it, and again, just for, you know, a bit of a refresher, but a great little film. But anyway, so yeah, James Hong, you worked with Billy Blanks too a lot. Love Billy's movies. He, you know, people seem sometimes to remember him just as the Tai Bo guy.
Yeah.
But he made a lot of
exactly. He
made a lot of really cool action movies, and you were in a few of them, like I mentioned, Talons of the Eagle and TC 2000. What was it like working with Billy?
Oh, Billy, I've known Billy for years. I knew Billy even prior to working on those movies back in the early 90s. You know, Billy's always been a national champion competitor in martial arts. You know, he's a great, great, great talent. And I remember when we were working on Talons of the Eagle, he'd say to me, "Hey, man, I got this new thing I'm doing, and I'm packing the house, you know." And back then, he called it aerobics, you know, like karate aerobics.
All right, yeah,
he called it aerobics, and he'd have me go with him to the store, and I got to go get some music and edit some music together for my classes, you know, when I get back to the States, you know. And he'd say, "Come on, let's go do something, I'll show you." And we'd do it, and I'd be like, "God, this is really not much of anything different from what I'm normally used to doing, you know, being a martial artist for most of my life."
Mm, yeah.
You know, I said, "Okay, well, whatever, you know." And then that was about 92, I think it was. And then, later, about 5 years later, man, he launches Tai Bo and knocks it out of the park.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so, literally knocked it out of the park. But, you know, and not without any issues, because he got taken advantage of too. And he had to, file some lawsuits, you know. And he probably got taken advantage of for about a good $100 million, you know.
Wow.
So, but you know, he did well. He did well also. He did make a chunk of change as well. And so everything's changed now. He's revamping it again, but I don't think it'll ever be as big as it was at that one point in time his career.
Sure.
So Billy is.
Yeah, sounds like a really nice, really great bloke, and he certainly made some great movies. Very talented martial artist, not unlike yourself. There's one thing I've always wanted to ask you, because I've never spoken to the man himself or had any opportunity to speak to him. But a big fan of his, like yourself, is Bolo Young. What is that guy like in real life?
Bolo Young, I tell you, when I first met Bolo, very intimidating.
Right.
Very intimidating, because he did not. You know, like you see him in his movies, he has this fierce look.
Yeah.
And he was like that in real life, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like thinking to myself, my goodness, this guy is pretty intimidating. I mean, does he not laugh, or does he not smile? Does he not, you know? And then I remember, and he was always kept a very serious look.
Yeah.
Very serious attitude. And I remember one time, you know, we were talking, and I started talking Chinese to him. And I said something to him that was kind of funny, you know, and all of a sudden he just bust up laughing, you know, and I was laughing so hard, because just to watch him laugh made me laugh, you know, I got such a kick out of that, you know. And then I said, okay, now this is the Bolo that I want to get to know, you know, this is the fun guy. This is, I see, he's hiding behind this mask, you know, but he's a really very soft-spoken. you know, yes, very talented, you know, fame for Enter the Dragon.
Yeah, sport, yeah.
You know, those are, and Tiger Claw.
Yeah, yeah,
you
sure.
You know, and then what we did in TC 2000. You know, he was studied back in the day, Hapkido. I think he was a black belt in Hapkido.
Right,
very
right.
Unusual for a person who was a also a Mr. Hong Kong, a bodybuilder.
Yeah, yeah.
Chinese Hercules, you know?
Yeah.
And for someone to have a that type of a physique and that big bulky physique, you know, and
yeah.
and to be able to move the way he does and be as limber as he is, it's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Man, that's a treat, because I cannot for the life of me picture that guy laughing at all. He always looks so menacing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I just cannot, because he doesn't strike me as a guy, you know, watching
yeah.
his movies, he doesn't strike you as the kind of guy who laughs or smiles too much. But... That's great. I mean, of course, you know, people that you only have ever known in movies, you don't know the human side of them. So, you know, it's wonderful.
Right.
It's wonderful to get the opportunity, just like, you know, this one, to talk with people who you've watched in movies and get to know a different side of them, because, you know, a public persona and a film persona is one thing, but, you know, most people that, when you finally get to talk to them, you know, most people forget that actors are human, you know, and they do normal
right.
stuff just like everybody else, but, you know.
Absolutely. You know, I've met some very incredible individuals, you know, from, you know, Stallone to Arnold Schwarzenegger to Clint Eastwood to Robert Downey Jr. In fact, I remember Robert Downey back in the 90s, about 96, 97. I remember when he was going through some very difficult times, and I remember James Hong was working on one of Robert Downey Sr.'s movies, and they're filming out on the beach. And I remember James asked me, you know, invited me out, so I went out there, and I met Robert Downey Sr., and he says, "Hey, Junior's down over there by the beach. Why don't you go say hi to him?" You know, so I go down there and talk with Robert Junior. You know, we're hanging out on the beach, we're talking, and you know, just enjoying ourselves and everything, and very soft spoken, you know, and almost you could feel that you knew he was going through issues. You know, you could just feel it. I mean, you sense it. He was going through issues.
Right. Yeah.
Issues, you know? And then thereafter, I remember. I went to Sundance Film Festival in 1998, and we were screening movies, you know, and having a good time. And I saw this Robert Downey Sr. movie, and I thought, oh my God, this must be the movie James was in. And I said, let's go see this movie, you know. And fortunately enough, a good friend of ours was the president of the Sundance Film Festival, so we were able to see any movie we wanted to.
Oh, wow.
So we got tickets to go watch that. And we go down, and we watch the movie, and it was a completely different movie. James wasn't even, you know, this isn't the movie James was in it, because it would be about the right timing when that movie would have came out.
Right.
After the movie, lo and behold, I saw Robert Downey Sr., and I went up to him, I said hello to him, he goes, "Oh, hey, how are you?" And he goes, "Yeah, James." He goes, "Oh, James, oh, God, I love that guy, you know?" And he goes, hey, Junior, stay right down over there, go say hi to him. And I said, "Oh, sure." I'm going down there. I'm talking, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, hey, how are you?" You know, he remembered me and everything. And I remember saying to him, I said, "Robert, have you ever thought about taking martial arts or anything like that?" And he looked at me and he goes, "No, not really." I said, "You know, you should really consider taking martial arts, because it could really help you out." And he goes, "You think so?" And I said, "Absolutely." Left it at about 2 years later, in about 2000, 2001,
right.
He starts taking martial arts.
Right.
And that's where his whole life changed, turned around.
Wow, yeah.
Literally turned around. And most people don't know this, but today, he's a black belt. I don't know if people know that.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, when you watch him do his martial arts, like in Sherlock Holmes, you know?
Yeah.
When he does the martial arts, he's really doing, and pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Really doing martial art.
Well, I mean, martial arts has always been a great system, not just for physical benefits, but also mental, you know, achieving a greater mental concentration and dexterity and all that type of thing, yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was kind of ironic with my relationship with Stallone is that Stallone is in a film that I'm one of the producers on that's released this year. It's a big animated feature called Animal Crackers.
Okay,
and
cool.
And I have, Emily Blunt, John Krasinski, Sir Ian McKellen, Danny DeVito, Gilbert Godfrey, Reagan Simone, Patrick Warburg, big cast.
Well, that's great. So Sly's a voice in it. He voices a character.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. These are all my voices in the character in the film.
Very cool. Oh, well, I'll have to check that one out. I've heard about it, but I didn't. I'm not completely familiar. I've heard the movies in existence, but I admit I haven't seen it yet. But so yeah.
It'll be released this year.
Oh, that'll be cool. I'll definitely have to check that one out. Don't mind the animated movies, and that sounds like a fantastic list of actors that you've assembled there.
Oh, absolutely! It's a great film. It looks just like a Pixar film. How we do it. You know, we're not a big studio, so you know we're able to minimize some of those costs.
Yeah.
But we were able to get a great, great product, and with this incredible cast. And it was always great to see Stallone because he, after he finished recording, I went into the studio and he looked at him and goes, "Hey, what are you doing here?" You know, I said, "Surprise!" I said, "I'm one of the executive producers." He goes, "Really?" You know, so we had a good, reconnection. You know, but I've always seen Stallone around. I've probably visited him on at least about half a dozen of the sets of his films. You know, and always with a big welcome, you know, so...
Yeah, he sounds like the kind of bloke that's, you know, it's nice that I know it's a business of, you know, intense relationships and then separate, but it's nice when people remember you and remember you fondly and can pick, hey, I remember you from, you know, and be welcoming and all that kind of thing. So it's great because, you know, the movie business tends, you're only, you know, in some instances, you know, there's different classes and these sort of actors don't mix with those sort of actors. But, I mean, you're all part of the business and you're all part of this wonderful machine that produces so much joy for a lot of people. So, you know, there's really no reason to be funny about it and to remember people that did something with you. You know, it's great. It's because you're all part of a great legacy.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I can't say that I've met any bad celebrities. I've met so many big celebrities. You know, you made a comment. You said, you know, spreading joy to people, and going back to the vineyard here real quick. I remember I was with the James. We were at the Monster Palooza over in Burbank, and he was one of the guests along with the cast of Blade Runner, and you know, signing autographs and everything. And
yes.
I was in a room, and I had to take a call, so I kind of went behind this pillar, you know. And all of a sudden, I get a text from one of my colleagues saying, "Harry, where are you at? Where are you at? Get back over here! You got to get back over here right now, you know." And I look around the post and I see the guy and I wave to him. He says, come here. And I go back over there. And James has just got through signing an autograph with this gentleman. And he signed it for this guy who brought a copy of the Vineyard DVD. And he signed a DVD. And James says, "This is the producer and who created it right here." And the guy looks at me and he goes, "Oh my God." He goes, "I want to thank you so much. Thank you so much for given me so much joy."
That's,
you know,
great.
In his, and I'm like, I was beside myself. I was like, "Oh my God!" This guy was like, I mean, it's such a little film, but it was like one of his favorite films, you know. And
yeah.
I'm like, "Oh my goodness."
Yeah. Now that's
I didn't know anything.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. That's really great. I love to hear stories like that. I mean, because nowadays we are flooded with so many big movies, massive event pitches, you know. And little movies, you know, if the Vineyard, say, had have happened today, it would easily get lost in amongst all of these big movies. But thankfully, it came along at such a wonderful time when, yes, of course, back then there were big movies as well, but there was more of an opportunity then for the middle ground where a lot of these other movies came in, and there was such a great market open, and they just, you know, like I said, because of VHS, these movies lived on and continue to live on, and their fan base only escalates because that was how people discovered films. Like, you know, if you found a good one and you'd say, oh, you'd go to your friends, have you seen this? And you need to watch this and give it to them, you know. And the same with DVD as well, and, you know, all that type of thing. And that was how people, you know, pass, like, just like, you know, parents would pass on movies to their kids and say, you know, there's no good movies. Oh, you need to watch this one, watch this. And they watch it and they go, oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. How come we've never seen anything like that? And there you go. And it's just, you know, it's wonderful how these movies survive and how, like you experienced there, unexpectedly they pop up and someone will go, hey, you did that. Remember that? Yeah, totally. And it's fantastic. It's great. It's just, it's wonderful to hear. But anyway, you're right, mate.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go on.
You know, when we sold the Vineyard to New World Pictures, they did not take they gave us an option, you know, if we wanted to go theatrical, but they said, you know, because they were giving us a minimum guarantee, which actually put us into profit. And they said, you know, but if we go theatrical and it doesn't do well, then we're going to have to, you know, cross collateralize the funds that we would have been given you, you know, and deduct from there. So we thought, you know what, better to give the investor back return on their investment, you know, make them happy. But what we did was, we James and I had a couple copies of prints of the film, you know, and we ended up sending it out to Atlanta. And so it aired in the theaters, in a couple of theaters in Atlanta, and my goodness, they sent us a newspaper article from the Atlanta Journal and Constitution, the largest paper in Atlanta, and the guy that the critic called it a 4-star howler. He loved the film.
Yeah.
And we always wondered whether or not what would have happened if we would have just released the thing theatrically. What could have happened, you know? And,
yeah.
And, but we always knew that had we were able to do the film a year earlier, year and a half earlier, then for sure I know that it could have gone full theatrical.
Yeah,
you know, because that, it was just time for us. It was time.
Mm. Look, the best thing is that it exists, and there are a lot of fans, and it's still out there, and it's I like the fact that people find these films, that they discover them, and when you discover them, you kind of feel like you're the person that, you're the only person that knows about it, until you talk to other people and they go, have you seen that movie? Oh, I love that movie. Oh, that was fantastic. I've always loved that movie. You know, and it's so great, because initially when you come across, you think, oh, that, you know, I've never, you know, some people will tell you, oh, I'd never heard of that before. And then they watch it and it's great. It's almost like, you know, a little discovery for them. And then they think that, oh, you know, I bet you no one knows about that movie. And then, of course, you talk amongst, you know, fellow cineasts or whatever else, and they go, oh, have you heard of this movie? Oh, sure. What do you mean you haven't heard of that movie? That movie's fantastic, you know. And that's how these things keep going. The whole thing perpetuates itself. Listen, Harry, we better talk a little bit about Forbidden Power, because it's a movie that people should see. It was absolutely fantastic. I was when I started watching the movie, so I didn't see all of the credits, so I missed your name because I had a few interruptions before I actually was able to sit down and watch it. But when you popped up in the movie, I go, that's Harry Mock. That's fantastic. And I thought, okay, yeah, that makes sense. He's the martial arts teacher, and who better? But it was also great to see the scene that's kind of like a flashback there. You see, you know, the the girl who's in the scene with you, how you saved her from the street right. punk thing. And I was going, oh, Harry's going to do a bit of the old, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. He's going to take out these guys. It was great to see.
Well, thank you. We didn't want to turn it into some hop, chop, suey martial art movie. He wanted me to go in there and just boom, real quick, you know, take out a few of the guys, you know, and just kind of, you know, slap the three guys that were watching, you know. And, you know, I tell you, talking about films that, you know, people discover. I think this is one of those films as well where people is going to get a kick out of it. We've screened it to some friends and family, and they all really enjoyed it. They found it just interesting, you know. I mean, nobody ever gone there. You know, it's like sexually transmitted power.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Not instead of a disease, it's the power, you know. The
yeah,
guy
yeah.
gets this power, and they try to recruit them, and all this stuff goes on, you know, and everyone that I screened it to had got really enjoyed it and got a kick out of it, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, myself, I'm always critical of myself, but I think that if we were doing something that was a little bit more action orientated, you know, I think I would have, you know, obviously I would have stepped it up and did a lot more stuff, but you know, you wanted to keep it sweet, simple, and short, and we did it, and I think we did it with the right taste.
Yeah,
you know, Paul's absolutely incredible. I mean, he's talking about a filmmaker that could go in there and get the job done, you know, and this guy really, really, you know, I have a lot of respect for him, you know, because he said he was going to do it, you know, and sure enough, he did it.
Yeah.
And brought me out to Seattle, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, I really had a great time out there. We're talking about going on to another project again, you know, one of his next projects. And I said, you know what, let me know. You want to use me? I'm here for you. Let me know.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic to see Paul because, you know, it's been a while between films for him. And, you know, I know that you've been busy, you know, doing behind-the-camera stuff. So it's a real treat in both instances to see you back in front of the camera again. And Paul directing a movie again, so it was just a double win all the way around to experience. And it's a great movie. I really hope a lot of people listening to this and a lot of people who you're sharing it with get it out there and spread the word, because that's sometimes the best advertising you can get, Harry, is word of mouth.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, you can spend.
And I hope that there has a viral. You know, it kind of goes viral, you know, people get a chance to see it because, you know, it deserves to be seen.
Yeah, no, it's a great film. Forbidden Power, my guest today has been the wonderfully awesome Harry Mock. You've heard us talking a bit about The Vineyard too. If you haven't seen The Vineyard, seek it out. It's a great, great movie, as well as all of others, Harry's movies. But yes, Forbidden Power. Please seek it out where you can. There's a Facebook page. Check it out. Harry, it's been wonderful at last, at long last, long-time fan, to have a chat with you this afternoon.
Well, thank you so much. It is my pleasure. I really appreciate this interview. And, you know, there's more to come.
That's great. We look forward to it, Harry. And you take care. And we definitely anticipate everything that you've got coming out, and yeah, I hope it all goes well for you, mate.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. 1,000 blessings to you. And
thank you very much, mate.